Welcome to Torat Imecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Leah Feinberg, and today we will be studying Shmuel Bet, Perek Yud, Chapter 10. Our perek opens sometime after the events relating to Tziva and Mephibosheth, with another episode that begins, at least, in keeping with the theme of chesed that we see throughout the foundational events of David's Malchut. The king of Ammon died, and his son, Hanun, reigned in his place. It's somewhat ironic that the new king is named Hanun, which in Hebrew means merciful, as we shall see very shortly that he is anything but. Pasuk bet, Vayomer David, E'ese chesed im Hanun ben Nachash, ka'asher asa aviv imadi chesed, Vayishlach David lenachamo biyad avadav el aviv, Vayavou avdei David eretz b'nei Amon. David said, "Let me deal kindly with Hanun, son of Nachash, as his father dealt kindly with me." And he sent a delegation of his servants to comfort him for the loss of his father, and the servants of David arrived in Ammon. The text does not elucidate what kindness David is referring to, and we find no mention of such a kindness in any supporting text. The Midrash, cited by Rashi, fills in the blank. When David was running away from Shaul, his family, as we have learned, sought refuge with the king of Moab, assuming that since they were descended from Rut, the Moabite, the king would protect his own relatives. Nevertheless, as we learned, the Moabite king was not so kindly disposed, and he had the entire family killed. Here we learn that there was an exception of one youth who escaped and was given sanctuary by Nachash, king of Ammon. Malbim explains that David knew he could not repay the kindness of Nachash by establishing diplomatic ties with Ammon, because the Torah explicitly prohibits seeking peace with the nation of Ammon on the grounds of their cruelty to the Jewish people, to whom they refused bread and water when they reached their border after wandering in the desert for 40 years. However, he thought that since Nachash had done him a personal kindness, he could repay him through the personal act of Nichum Avelim, comforting the mourners. Nevertheless, when a delegation sent by the king is seen heading to a foreign country, whatever his intentions may be, the impression is that of an official visit. And for this reason, Chazal criticized David for sending the delegation, as it appears to be a violation of the Torah's teaching, even if that was not the intent. And this misperception led to tragic consequences. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Vayomru sarei bnei Amon el Hanun Adonehem. Hamechabed David et avicha be'inecha ki shalach lecha menachamim? Halo ba'avurcha korat ha'ir uleragla uleofcha shalach David et avadav elecha. The ministers of Ammon said to their master Hanun, "Do you really think that David is seeking to honor your father in your eyes, that he has sent this delegation of consolation? Surely he has sent them to investigate and scout out the city in order to overthrow it." The implication being, perhaps he thinks that now your father, who was a strong king, is dead, Ammon would be vulnerable to attack, so he sent spies disguised as a delegation of comfort. Mishbitzot Zahav shares an important insight here. People judge one another according to their own mindsets. David, who operated with a chesed mindset, assumed that people would surely recognize his act as one motivated by kindness. The officers of Ammon, to whom chesed was a foreign concept, attributed to David the slyness that they themselves would have exhibited in the same circumstances. Hanun, acting on the advice of his ministers, took the servants of David and shaved half their beards and cut off half their tunics and sent them on their way. One can only imagine the utter degradation experienced by these men, who had to travel openly under such humiliating circumstances. Beards and clothing were considered signs of one's dignified status. Sadly, this text brings to mind images of Nazi persecution, in which the cutting of beards was a similar form of degradation. Here, the cutting of half the beard and half the tunic is explained by Abarbanel as symbolic of the ambiguity of their mission. Even in the misguided apprehension of the Ammonites, there was at least ostensibly some good to their mission, as they came at least in the guise of mourners and were only suspected of being spies. Word of their deep shame reached David, and he sent a message to them saying, "Remain in Jericho until your beards grow, and then return." The people of Ammon saw that they had become abhorrent to David, and they sought hired reinforcements, 20,000 soldiers from neighboring Aram Beit Rehov and Aram Tzova, another 1,000 from the king of Ma'achah, and 12,000 from Tov. When David heard that Ammon was amassing these forces, he sent Joab and all his heroic warriors to the front. The Ammonites went out and deployed their forces at the city gate, while the hired forces were stationed in the open field. Joab realized that he faced two fields of battle. So he selected the elite of his soldiers, and he arranged them to face Aram in the field. The remainder he placed under the command of his brother, Avishai, and set them the mission of facing the Ammonites at the city wall. Vayomer, Im techezak Aram mimeni, v'hayita li lishua, v'im b'nei Ammon yechzeku mimcha, v'halachti lehoshialach. He said to his brother, "If Aram overpowers me, you will come to my salvation, and if Ammon overpowers you, I will come to your salvation." Chazak v'nitchazek be'ad Amenu uva'ad arei Elokeinu, v'Hashem yaseh hatov be'inav. Let us be strong and courageous for the sake of our people and the cities of our God, and may Hashem do as is good in his eyes. We see here several qualities of Joab. First of all, his skill as a commanding officer who takes stock of the situation and even under intense pressure devises a clear strategy tailored to the situation. We see his humility as he admits the possibility of his own defeat, even before suggesting that his brother might be overcome. We see his bravery and leadership as he takes the harder mission upon himself, because the stronger fighters were stationed out in the open field and the weaker fighters were stationed at the city wall where he sent Avishai. And perhaps most significantly, we see his deep faith expressing himself as David has done when he faced similar challenges, as when he faced Goliath, saying, "Ata ba elai b'cherev uv'chanit uv'chidon, va'anochi ba elecha b'shem Hashem Tzvakot Elokei Ma'archot Yisrael. You come at me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come at you in the name of Hashem, God of the armies of Israel." Or as he says in Tehillim, Perek Chaf, chapter 20, "Elev arechev ve'elev asusim, va'anachnu b'shem Hashem Elokeinu nazkir. Others place their trust in chariots and horses, but we call in the name of Hashem," as Joab does here, recognizing that ultimately the outcome of the battle is in the hands of Hashem, not in the number or position of the troops or the military strategy employed. Joab and the men who were with him approached to wage war with Aram, who fled from before them. The Ammonites saw that Aram had fled, and they too fled from before Avishai and retreated into the city. And Joab drew back from Ammon and returned to Yerushalayim. Aram saw that they had been defeated by Israel and gathered together. Hadad-Ezer sent and summoned Aram from across the Euphrates River, and their forces arrived under the command of Shobach, the general of Hadad-Ezer. When this was told to David, he gathered all of Israel and crossed the Yarden to Chelam and fought against Aram. Aram fled from before Israel, and David killed 700 charioteers and 40,000 riders of Aram, as well as Shobach, whom he killed on the spot. All of the kings who were subject to Hadad-Ezer saw that he had been defeated at the hands of Israel, and they became subject to Israel and paid them tribute. And Aram was too frightened to persist in coming to the aid of Ammon, which left Ammon to fend for themselves. Thank you for studying together, Le'ilui Nishmat Frida, Bat Moshe Eliyahu.